So greetings once again to everyone, and welcome to another one of those special weekend podcasts that I know everybody loves to listen to kill some time on a Sunday. And we've got a really good one for you today, a return visit from our friend Keith Neumeyer. If you're in the metals, if you're actively following silver, you know Keith is just a tremendous ally of ours. He is the CEO and president of First Majestic Silver, one of the biggest primary silver miners in the world, and he's a staunch advocate for our cause, recognizes, of course, that the silver markets are, let's just say, managed in large part by the bullion banks, and he's, like I said, a big advocate for us. So it's always good to talk to him and get some updates. Keith, thank you so much again for spending some time with us.
Well, Craig, it's great talking to you as well, and actually a green day. We've had so few green days in the last couple of weeks. It's nice to see.
It's like that one period in May, Keith, where we had, 16 days in a row when silver went down. That's perfectly natural. That happens in markets. I've seen Apple go down 16 days in a row, for example, right?
Well, not in the last 20 years.
Exactly. Well, let's start there. Because like I said, you have been a vocal proponent and advocate of our cause for so long, calling attention to the obvious manipulation, the obvious management of prices. You know, it was just last week when at 7:06 Eastern time in the evening, when no one's around, Asia's not open yet, Europe's asleep, everybody in New York is still at cocktail hour, and all of a sudden there's this 5,000 lot order to sell the September silver contract, and it takes 10% out of the price in a matter of milliseconds. Again, this is the internationally recognized price, if you want to call it that. What do you make of these flash crashes? They seem to be happening more frequently. Is it just a random high-frequency trading event, do you think, or do you think it's related directly to the manipulation?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, this flash crash, name that we've been now calling these kinds of market moves have been showing up more and more and in the major markets. You know, just a couple of weeks ago, we had a flash crash on the NASDAQ where a handful of high-tech stocks were fixed at one price, and some stocks were down 80% and other stocks were up by 2,000 or 3,000%. And, you know, right away, of course, the NASDAQ comes out and apologizes and said it was a computer glitch, and they cancel all the trades and, you know, everything goes back to normal. You know, and so that's a real true computer problem, a flash crash. But in silver and gold, you know, just a couple of weeks before silver, no one came out, the COMEX, no one came out and said, hey, by the way, we had a computer glitch. We're going to cancel all the trades and sorry about the problem. You know, it's the fact that it's not talked about tells me, quite frankly, that it was actually purposely done. And the big banks behind the scenes, of course, who run these markets, you know, the regulators don't want to, you know, get their feet muddy by causing problems with their major clients. So, of course, they stay mute on the whole topic. And you know, I think it screams of manipulation.
Yes, it certainly looks that way. Again, we never get these, what would we call it on the upside? We don't even have a term for a spike up out of the blue that adds 10%, do we? It's always this flash crash instead.
Well, if that happened, of course, they would cancel all the trades.
Well, that's right, too. That's right, too. And so here we are. It continues, obviously, to this day. Even though we've all seen the verification of this now, we've got all from those class action suits in the discovery phase, we've got all of the texts and the emails and the chat rooms about, hey, let's go crush silver. Ha, ha, ha. Won't this be fun? You've been a big proponent of those class action suits, too, and have actually spoken with some of the attorneys involved. I don't know. Have you heard anything new in that regard? Any updates there?
It's been quiet over the last couple of months. I'm not exactly sure why. You know, I thought that, with the fellow from Deutsch, you know, finally getting, you know, charged or admitting guilt for what he did in manipulating silver and gold with other banks, and the fact that the CFTC actually put out a news release on a Friday about 3 or 4 weeks ago now, which is quite surprising. You know, Ted Butler even commented on how surprised he was that the CFTC hired this guy as an employee to actually act as their internal kind of watchman or policeman, you know, looking at these manipulative types of events and uncovering and showing the CFTC how these banks actually manipulate these markets. So I think, you know, if in fact the CFTC is actually serious about getting to the bottom of these problems by putting, expert traders in their employment like they've done in this particular fellow's case, I think, we're winning. And I think that's positive.
Also kind of has a little bit of the fox and hen house analogy going perhaps too, though.
Well, if you want to be, I guess negative about it and, conspiracy theory about it, you could say, we hire the experts so we could avoid having problems or something. I suppose, people all know that the largest trading floor in the world is owned by the Federal Reserve, the U.S. government. And they have some of the smartest people hired from, the colleges that are working in algos and, trading all these markets around the world. So, you're right. They hire a lot of the best guys, and that's how they can keep these markets elevated the way they do.
Well, that's right. That's right. And of course, again, one of the markets that always seems to be under attack is the COMEX digital silver market. That still amazingly is allowed to determine like an accepted price for spot metal. I know, you're at the forefront trying to educate your fellow CEOs about that, but let's talk specific to one of your companies. Again, you're the CEO and the president of First Majestic Silver. We've driven price now down. It's at least as we speak, it's about unchanged, actually a little bit down on the year. We're down here near this $16 level where, we bottomed at 14 a couple years ago. And that 14 seemed to be almost a what we call a physical floor at my site, a spot where it just seemed like price couldn't go much lower because you can't get it out of the ground for any less than that. Do you have any thoughts on that, at least for one, for First Majestic, what your all-in sustaining costs are? And then just as the industry as a whole, where do you think that price is?
Well, we get emails and, telephone calls and I get tweets and, messages from shareholders and investors, from around the world. And everyone gets extremely frustrated and often they blame, the mining companies for, the poor share performance and it's difficult on investors, but investors should really understand how difficult it is on the miners. We're trying to manage relatively large businesses, and the all-in costs are critical to the success of our business, obviously, and that's very difficult to manage because we're doing exploration, we're doing development, we're doing a lot of mining is a very, very capital intensive business, and if you don't spend the money and do the exploration development to run big advances ahead of current mining activity, all of a sudden production is going to start to fall off. And, we've seen that happen in three of our mines over the last few years because, we had to grind down our costs so much that we weren't making an investment in our mines at all. There are two numbers that are critical to the mining sector. One is the all-in sustaining cost, and that's the amount of money it costs to just to sustain the business at current levels without doing any kinds of exploration or development to advance the mines. And that number in this space is probably in the $13 to $15 range. So, we're pretty close to that. So the miners are squeaking by and trying to invest. But the problem the miners have is after 5 years of low metal prices and trying to get our balance sheets in order to try to start reinvesting capital again in our mines, the mines have not had the investments. So all of a sudden, the mines are now producing less. And this, we've seen this on a worldwide scale, zinc and gold and silver, of course, miners are producing less metal than they did a few years ago, and that's a direct result of the investment. So the second number is the all-in cost, and that's a number that's not published by the mining sector. It's a number that you can get. You have to dig through the financial statements, and you have to add it all up together. And the difference between your all-in sustaining costs and your all-in costs is the investment, and that's the future of the mines. Without that investment, the mines simply can't grow. Right. So that's your exploration, that's your development. And all of a sudden, today reinvesting all that capital right now just to try to get ahead of current mining activity and add ounces to our portfolio so we could increase production, 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now. And that's the biggest challenge we're having. So the difference between your all-in sustaining costs and your all-in costs can range from anywhere from $2 to $10 an ounce. So, you could have a mine. Let's say all of a sudden you decide to invest $10 million in exploration in one of your projects. all of a sudden your all-in costs go from maybe $12 or $13 an ounce to $20 an ounce. But you're doing it on purpose because you know you're losing money, but you're doing it for the future of health of the mine. And that's where we are as a business, and that's where the whole mining sector is as a business. So as if the price of the metal fluctuates to the great degree as it is currently, we have to start and stop projects. So all of a sudden, you know, we're drilling away. We got, let's say, you know, 10 rigs active, you know, drilling away, and all of a sudden this price of the metal drops by $2 or $3, then we have to get rid of half our rigs.
That just makes for just brutal math. I'm sitting here thinking as you're talking, it's almost as if the entire system between price and the way that the companies are held hostage by the price is almost like held in this tight range now, so that you guys can't kind of break away and start making a bunch of profits, and you continue to be reliant. So many companies would continue to be reliant upon the banks for financing because price never gets away. And it's almost like the banks have the whole thing circled to their benefit. Whether they do or not, I guess, is a whole other story, but it's got to feel that way sometimes.
Yeah, in these low metal price environments, you know, it's a survival game. And, you know, we spend a ton of time looking for every dollar to save. You know, we're automating, bringing technology into the business. The mining sector today compared to 10 years ago is completely different than it was. You know, there's way more, you know, technology being used today in mining to drive costs down, and there's still much more technology that can be brought into the mining sector, and it's going to look a lot different 10 years from now. And you know, we're hoping to even drive costs down even further. You know, I hope metal price goes up. I think it will over the next couple of years. I'm a bull on silver, and I'm very outspoken on that. But you know, we have to focus on costs because, you know, as a miner, you know, we can't, you know, be focused on what the metal is going to do tomorrow. We have to be focused on what our cost of pulling it out of the ground is.
Sure, sure. All right, well, let's just use that, I guess, as the background of the last topic I wanted to cover today, and that has to do with First Mining Finance, that other company of which you're the chairman. And it's a story that I know so many people got behind last year, and it's still a wonderful story, but, it, you know, there's some math involved there too, and prices need to rise to make some of the properties that you've acquired look even more rosy to maybe somebody else that could then develop them. Just an update. You know, the price, the stock got to a little over a dollar a share a year ago, and now it's back down to 52-week lows near 45, 48 cents. How are things going there? How's the portfolio look? Just any updates that you can pass along?
Oh, sure. The, you know, First Majestic is just 2017 is First Majestic's 15th year in business. And, you know, it's you know, surprising that it was 15 years ago I founded that company. But, you know, in the early stages, you know, we were buying up, you know, old mines, and it took a lot of time, you know, to get to where we are today. And you know, First Mining is you know, basically, I think anyways, First Majestic, you know, 15 years ago, where back then we're out busily acquiring assets and developing those assets. And you know, First Mining was very fortunate enough to put together what I think one of the best gold portfolios there is in the world. And in safe jurisdictions, you know, we saw what happened to Tahoe recently in Guatemala. You know, that's terrible. But I've contended right throughout my career, because I spent a lot of time in Africa in the first company that I helped found. And you know, I know what political risk is. And you know, when I put First Majestic together, I was very focused on one country, one metal, because I knew Mexico was a good, friendly mining jurisdiction. And when I put First Mining together, I focused on Mexico and Canada because I'm comfortable with both of those jurisdictions. And so lo and behold, you know, we developed this portfolio of 25 assets, you know, very much focused on Canadian gold. And now we're in the development stage. So now that the portfolio is in place, we have to spend money and time and start developing these assets. And it takes time to do it. You know, it's a, you know, 2-3 year, you know, concerted effort about drilling and developing and you know, proving to the world that the ounces exist. And of course, you've always got, you know, the market to deal with and the, you know, the fluctuations that come with that. But I'm very excited about First Mining. You know, the drilling program that's going on at Goldland, we're just recommencing there after, you know, we drilled 100 holes. We're going back and are probably going to drill another 20 holes, you know, deeper down into the system. And Cameron looks like it's going to be drilled in the next couple of months. And we're now working on Hope Brook to be drilled. So, you know, we're just focused on, as I said earlier, Craig, you know, just developing the ounces and proving to the world that these assets are, in fact, world-class assets, as we believe they are. But it takes time to accomplish all that. And, you know, at today's price of 60 cents a share Canadian, it's just, you know, my belief is that it's very much undervalued at these current prices. And I bought, you know, about 100,000, I think about, you know, I think around 200,000 shares in the last 6 weeks at the current prices.
That says a lot right there as to your faith in everything, and that it is undervalued at this price. Is the company always actively looking for new things to add, or is that maybe something that you put on hold from time to time? What's your position there?
Well, you know, one thing I've learned, Craig, in my career is that you have to be patient. You know, I put the First Majestic portfolio together, you know, over, you know, the last acquisition was 2015. So, you know, 13 years into the business, we made our last acquisition. And in the first 5 years of the business, we made the majority of acquisitions. And in the case of First Mining, it all comes down to price. You know, we do get contacted by people, you know, that have assets that are of interest to us. But, you know, the prices of assets right now are, you know, much higher than they were in 2015 when I bought the entire portfolio. So, you know, I'm very, very price sensitive, and I'm quite happy with the current portfolio. So I quite honestly don't think First Mining needs another asset. But look, if something came to our table that we really liked and if the price was right, we'd grab it.
And obviously a rising tide lifts all boats. You know, if the metal price ever gets a sustained rally again like we had in the first half of 2016, it's going to change sentiment, and it's going to get even regular investors and institutional investors, again, interested in the sector, which will, again, lift all of the equities, pretty much at the same time. Is there, though, let's just put it this way, how price sensitive do you think that portfolio is at First Mining Finance? Is there something where, like, oh, gosh, if we added $200 or $300 to the gold price and moved silver back up into the 20s, that it just makes everything look that much more attractive?
Well, I think that would say, I would answer that by saying yes, but it's just not First Mining. It's everything out there. You know, look at First Majestic, for example. At First Majestic's production level, every $1 move in the silver price adds about $18 million in profit to the bottom line.
Wow.
So that's that's huge leverage, right? So, if you do a preliminary economic assessment on Goldland or on Springpole, and you use $1,250, and in the case of Springpole, I think the net asset value is somewhere around $600 million. The market cap is about a third of that, and that's just one of our assets. And that's at, I think we use $1,300 gold on that particular PEA. And if you were to use $1,500 or $1,600 gold, you know, all of a sudden the NPV on that asset would just go through the roof.
Yeah. And so I would imagine at this point, as we conclude, about the best advice, if you would, that you give anybody, just to be patient with the sector. Recognize that the prices are clearly undervalued and have been for a long time now, and that there is definitely opportunity out there, even with price where it is. Would that kind of sum up, I guess, your position?
Well, you know, look, investors are, you know, I'm an investor. You know, we're all investors. And you know, investors hate when things go down, and they hate when things go up, quite frankly, because I remember, you know, when the sector finally took off in early 2016, and there was no one invested, you know, right. You know, we had capitulation in December 2015, and we hit, you know, I remember First Majestic was down 20% in January of 2016, and then all of a sudden things turned and silver took off after hitting $13.30. It hit $21, but, you know, 6 months later, and the whole sector was on fire, and everyone complained, geez, I didn't buy any. Mm-hmm. Or they either sold too soon, because right when the rally started in February, March, they were lucky, they were happy to get out, or they didn't own anything at all. And then some of the investors got their heads handed to them because they came in July and August right at the top and bought, you know, right at the top of the market, and the market corrected. So, you know, it's a kind of a funny market. But, you know, right now, you know, these kinds of values that you see, like these stocks are down 50%, you know, approximately, depending on the stock, of course, but, you know, around 50% from what they were, you know, 12 months ago. And you've got the NASDAQ, the S&P at all-time highs. All the money is flowing into those markets, and this reminds me of 2000. You know, when the high tech sector, you know, the Nasdaq hit 5,000, and by, you know, 2002, the Nasdaq was at 2,500. It dropped 50%. And that was the light under the fire of the entire 10-year bull run of the mining sector, which started in 2002, which came to an end in 2012. And I think we're going to see a very similar thing. And you can never know when this is going to happen. You don't know if this is going to be tomorrow. You don't actually even know if it's going to be a year from now. But what I do know is when this does change, all these stocks are going to gap up so quickly that you're not going to be able to buy them. Or if you're going to buy them, you're going to be chasing them at much, much higher prices, right? So, you know, it's tough to be an investor, granted. But you got to, you know, my only recommendation to investors is find good companies. Don't put all your money in one. Spread out a portfolio among, you know, a dozen or half a dozen good quality companies in the sector that you like, and be very patient. Of course, keep your eye on the company in case something fails, of course, internally. And then, you know, if something, of course, does go wrong, you may have to sell and take a loss. But, you know, as long as the business itself is still functioning well and you still like it, there are three questions you should ask when you own a stock. You know, should I buy? Should I sell? Should I hold? You know, the day you buy it, of course, you just made that decision. But every single day, you ask the same question. And don't look at the price. Look at the fundamentals. Is the business still viable? Is the business still in the same situation as it was when I first made the decision to buy the stock? Right. And if the answer is yes every day, don't even look at the price. Right. Just ignore it.
Yeah. No, and same could be said for the underlying metal, too. I mean, you kind of make that same argument on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you, my friend, those are some astute words of wisdom that I hope everybody either heeds or goes back and listens again until they do heed them. I can tell you, as an investor and a longtime investor in both First Majestic and First Mining Finance, I mean, just so everyone knows, I'm a believer and have not changed any one iota of my belief in what you're doing. And I just appreciate all that you do, Keith, really on almost a daily basis out there trying to help all of us break the stranglehold that these banks have on the sector. And once we finally are successful, we're going to see some crazy stuff, and it's all going to be rewarding in the end. But in advance of that, I sure appreciate all that you do, and I very much appreciate all your time this afternoon to kind of bring us up to speed on everything.
Well, thanks for your time as well, Craig. And, you know, when we see a smash like we did in gold and silver, you know, they seem to be very, very desperate moves, you know, in very illiquid times of both markets. And, you know, I think that tells me that we're starting to win this whole battle. And more and more people are talking about it. I remember, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, you talk about manipulation and people would laugh at you, say there's no manipulation going on at all. And, you know, when you see these kinds of activities, it's becoming mainstream that, you know, there is manipulation going on in these markets and everyone now believes it. And I think that's the first step in actually healing these markets.
I would agree with you. Again, Keith, thank you. Always great to visit with you. I hope you have a great rest of your summer, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Okay, well, you too, and thanks again, Craig.
And from everyone here, TFMR, thanks for listening. We'll do this again soon.